This episode of Doing It For The Kids is supported by Nutmeg, because finding your way in life isn't getting any easier or cheaper. To gift your children a financial head start, why not consider a Junior ISA? And with a Nutmeg Stocks and Shares Junior ISA, you can follow your investments via their easy-to-use mobile app, and there's no hidden fees or charges to catch you out. Take your children on the investment journey with you, and there's a good chance they'll make wiser decisions later. What's more, you can choose one of Nutmeg's socially responsible portfolios for an investment pot you'll be proud to hand over to the next generation. That's going to make everyone feel good. Open a Junior ISA today at nutmeg.com.
Capital at risk. JSMLs apply.
Oh, right. This is going to be interesting.
What is it?
It shouldn't be. We shouldn't break with convention.
Yeah, I just feel like I might vom at any moment.
Oh, really?
It doesn't help that I just went for a wee. And you know, like, when you sit... Too much information.
No, go on.
You know when you sit down on the toilet and you're like, whoa, why are my cheeks moist? Like, what? What is on the seat?
Oh, my God. Thank
it's
you.
Probably my son's piss, but... I don't think that helped my, like, feeling queasy cause. Oh, right. Better do this before we see my dinner again.
Hello, you're listening to the Doing It For The Kids podcast, where we swear a bit too much and talk a bit too fast about freelance life with kids in the mix. I'm Frankie, and this is Steve.
Hello, yes, each week we take a question from the Doing It For The Kids community, do our best to answer it, but of course we start each episode by looking back at last week's episode. And last week's episode was...
It was about, like, a million social media things. All the social media questions.
That's right. Yeah, Richard Burks got in touch. Richard said, okay, disclaimer, I'm not an expert, but this works for me. I'm heavily lent into Twitter because it's where my audience are, and I like it there most of the time. Personally, I schedule stuff. I use RecurPost, which allows you to put posts in buckets, which then tweet out at set times, so you don't have to schedule each individual post. I top up my buckets each week. There's other things like Smarticue and MeetEdgar, which do similar things. Yeah, I've tried Smarticue, that reminds me. I also allocate time every day to A, post something on the fly, usually something personal or something I'm doing that day, B, reply to comments / shares, and C, see what others are doing and comment on that. This way, it doesn't drain too much of my time, but I'm also consistent, and it's social media after all.
Rebecca Lismer says, I live on Instagram. It's where my people are. But I definitely need stronger boundaries sometimes. My customers buy because I show them my process. Every time I make a rainbow blanket and show myself making it, bam, another blanket sale. Every time I show new fabrics, QDMs asking me when the new high chair covers are going to be available to buy. I focus on the social media I like, no Twitter, LinkedIn and minimal Facebook for me, just here for the groups. And I have no FOMO about it whatsoever.
Just to say, it occurred to me after we recorded that one, some people have freelance businesses without being on social media.
Yes, very true.
But I'll be honest, I think they're missing a trick. I think the positives outbalance the negatives. Mm-hmm. But do what works for you. Don't feel like you really have to do something if you really don't like it.
And also, a lot of people are taking an impromptu break from social media right now. I just feel like people understand that and you'll just come back thriving in a couple of months' time when you're ready. Because everyone will know. Everyone knows what's going on. Everyone's in the same boat. If you need to just stop for now, I think that's totally fine. Go have a bath instead. It's cool.
You see, you're allowed to have damp cheeks in a bath. It's positively encouraged.
So we took 2 weeks off because basically last week was shit for various reasons. And I didn't want to make a podcast. But we're back now. How are you? How's it been going?
Oh, pretty good, actually. This morning, my son and I... went and had a haircut.
Epic.
It was weird. They make you wear a mask. They wear like a visor. Apparently that's the law. Then they put like a disposable gown on you. One good side point of the new wave of barbers, it gives you an excuse not to partake in small talk.
Yes, I'm 100% on board with that.
It's much harder. I had my favourite hairdresser today, so she and I know each other very well. But if I get one of the blokes, they always ask me about football. And I did think, well, with the mask on, they don't know whether it's me saying it. I could just record Alan Shearer off the telly. See the match at the weekend? Why, yes, it was really good, man. I thought he did a despicable thing at the back with that formation.
Wow, yeah, you really don't watch football, do you? No.
Anyway, how the hell are you?
Yeah, I mean, I might be sick. But other than that, I had a moment this week. It's particularly funny because we had that episode, when was it, 2-3 weeks ago, where I was talking about being able to identify Disney movies without my glasses on at 7 a.m. If you didn't listen to the episode, I do this thing where I don't put my glasses on in the morning because I'm in denial about the fact the day has begun. So this happened again this week where Rob had gone out for a big cycle ride and I was in denial hardcore till like 2 o'clock in the afternoon. I was like, the day has not begun. We're all in our pyjamas. It's fine. And my daughter, who's like nearly two, she was essentially destroying our entire flat. And one of her favourite things is taking things out of our hallway table. So like keys, cards, pen knives, all sorts of shit. Meanwhile, I was trying to do basic stuff like do a wee, wash my face, brush my teeth. So I was doing all these things. And then she comes to the bathroom, starts playing around, pulls all the toilet roll off the thing. We've got these like drawers under the sink, just taking them out, getting all my fucking sanitary towels out, put them all over the floor. You know the drill, people. And then I was finally finished, turned around, and then she's playing with the toilet seat, standard. And then she points in the toilet and is like going, you know, look, mummy, look, without the words. And there was like a big brown thing in the bottom of the toilet. So I thought, oh, her brother must have done a poo at some point this morning. I just hadn't noticed because I've been busy firefighting.
Well, we've all been there.
Yeah. So I pressed the flush to get rid of the poo. And then I have this like flashback to 5 minutes previously where she'd got the car key out of the hallway table and clearly had dropped it in the toilet and was going, mummy, look, I dropped the fucking car key in the toilet. And I'd pressed the flush and then went, put my hand down the toilet. I actually managed to get it out. Thank the Lord. God. But it was like, I mean, you know how toilets work. I had to like put my hand like in the like the bendy tube bit.
You bend
right to catch it before it went.
Just imagine your car key ending up in a sewer or flushed out into the River Thames.
Yeah,
just a carp eating it, and every time it bites down outside your window, blip blip. Okay, this week's question is anonymous. So we haven't had an anonymous one for ages. Since we've not done it for a while, should explain. A long, long time ago, we found that the best way to make up a name, so it feels like we're talking to somebody, is to look at a website called Fantasy Name Generators. And the best names are the detective names, because they're just realistic enough.
Hit me with some options.
Rowan Heath.
Quite into Rowan, yeah.
Jaden Foreman. Mo White. There's some strong contenders. I like the idea of Mo White.
As in just M-O?
M-O.
Like Mo from EastEnders?
Yeah.
Cool. So this week's question is anonymous, but it is in fact coming from Detective Mo White. It's like Snow White. Mo White says...
Hi-ho!
How do you know you're ready to make the leap into freelancing, especially during COVID? COVID? Anyone know?
You're right. It's not like it's not been said a lot. COVID.
Is it? Is it really? COVID. Oh, wait.
COVID.
Sure. I've been freelancing on the side for a while and I'm feeling super uninspired by my day job lately. I don't currently make enough freelancing to make it work with healthcare and such. Thanks, America. But I'm considering making the jump. What were your must-dos before jumping into full-time self-employment?
Okay, I don't know whether I should say this at the beginning or at the end. Maybe I should say it twice.
Ooh, must be important.
You will never feel like you are ready.
Yes. Rule for parenting, rule for freelancing.
Yeah, it really is. If you waited until you were ready to have kids, you would never have kids. Mm. And it's the same with going freelance. There are certainly things that you can do to set yourself up for success, but if you really want to go for it, go for it, and you will figure it out. Mo, listen up. I didn't do this. I wish I had. I wish I had had a buffer of cash. When you are starting out as a freelancer, it, you know, it doesn't just go from nothing to 100, basically. Mm. It can be a gradual build-up. And by gradual, I mean it could be years of building up. And I wish I had done the sensible thing and had a buffer of cash. I mean, that helps in general anyway, because it helps you say no to certain things and yes to other things. But it is a really good safety blanket to have. And the best time you can build that up is when you are in full-time employment.
Yes.
Before you go freelance. It might be, if you're freelancing on the side, that it's the freelance cash rate you're earning that becomes the buffer.
Yeah, when I went freelance, so I was made redundant. So my situation was slightly different. I was made redundant, which meant I did have some cash. I'm hesitant to say, you know, I had a big buffer, because I've been only working for this organisation for like 3 years. I did not get a lot of money, but it gave me, like, even if not a long-term safety net, it gave me a psychological safety net. It gave me that, like, okay, I have the confidence to take a financial risk, essentially, and see what happens. And when I went self-employed, as part of my redundancy, I was offered like various bits of training to set me up for that. And I did a course about like becoming a sole trader and all that jazz. And he told me, I don't know if this is still the case, this was 9 years ago, he was like, you need 6 to 9 months worth of cash, realistically, to get going with this.
Another thing you need, an idea of where your clients are. Like, it helps to know where the hell you're going to find work.
Yeah, like, I think a classic that people fall into is, like, I'm definitely was guilty of this when I started, was feeling like stuff would just come to me to a certain extent. The work would come, but oh my God, no, like, it takes so much work to get the work. Mo's been freelancing on the side for a while, so I imagine he or she has built up some sort of network of people that are interested in whatever it is they're going to freelance in. You're already ahead of the game in that respect.
And some people, when they're freelancing on the side, in that bit, when they're still full-time employed, do amazing jobs of building themselves up as an expert. And in fact, like, sometimes I reach out to people for the Being Freelance podcast. Turns out they're not full-time freelance. Mm. Like, but it looks to the world like they are. I'm ready to hire them almost, you know? And
yeah.
That's almost where you want to be. Does it look like you're open for business, I guess? That said, if you've been freelancing on the side and you've already got some work coming in, one thing that can happen is that you might have a really juicy client and you might think, okay, I've got that juicy client, I will quit my job. But you want to be careful, I think, at the same time as not having all your eggs in one basket. When I quit my job, I had quite a big freelance gig on the side. And I thought, you know what? That freelance gig is paying so much, it's almost paying what I earn in my job. So if I quit my job, I will have that, and then I can find extra work on top of that, and I'll be laughing. I handed in my resignation. I had 3 months to work out, right? Within about 3 weeks into that, the big juicy client let me go. Because they had taken on new funding, and as part of that, they had changed the way they were doing their marketing, and everything I was doing was put on hold. And it was like this whole thing was whipped out from under me, and I basically had nothing but little bits and pieces. So that's why I'm just saying, take it from me, don't put all your eggs in one basket.
That's just a rule for freelancing, full stop, isn't it?
It really is, but it can be tempting, right?
Yeah, I guess if you'd been offered a big contract or whatever, be easy to think you're sorted.
Maybe a key word you just said is contract. You know, like, if it was a contract where they were saying, yes, here's work for the next 3 to 6 months, then I would have been all right. But it wasn't a written in stone contract.
Well, that's one of the things I was going to say, right, was it's taken me 8 years to do like all the seemingly boring admin stuff that protects you. Ultimately, it's taken me a really long time to get all of those things in place, and in hindsight, I would encourage you, as somebody about to take that leap, to sort that shit out as early as possible. So things like having a contract written up that's specific to your business that you can give to clients. Insurance, right? I got professional indemnity insurance something like six years in. And I had no idea how much I needed that until I did it, because I slept better the night I sorted that insurance.
Right. Yeah.
The weight was lifted immediately. Yeah.
And it can be tempting to put those things off because you just get into doing the work.
And you think it's an expense you can't afford, but you can. It's like, you know, 20 quid a month. It's really not that much money.
for peace of mind. Just quietly burping. It's coming.
Another thing I wish I'd done before I went freelance, actually had a good idea of how my taxes would work.
Oh my God,
and
yes.
How I would be paying them.
Absolutely.
And therefore how I would be saving them. I wish I had set up a business account.
Yes.
And treated myself like a business from the beginning. But that isn't my money, and I know I wish I'd used proper accounting software like FreeAgent so that I could see how much tax I owed and when and all of that and tracked my invoices, yada, yada, yada. But honestly, the tax thing, I ballsed up so bad.
Oh my God,
it's
don't.
It's just not funny.
Same.
And I hear it so many times. And what we do in the UK will be different, Mo, for you in the US. So figure out what it is and what you've got to do where you are. Also, you're right to worry about the healthcare thing. And therefore, you need to make sure that you factor that sort of stuff into your pricing. Please make sure you do that right, because you don't want to, you know, it feels risky going freelance when you have a mortgage. It feels risky going freelance when you have kids. But if you're in a country where you don't get things like healthcare, then clearly you need to factor that in and make sure that you're going to be okay.
I was going to say a similar thing in that my advice to me 8 years ago would be put your fucking rates up. Like, what are you doing? It was crazy how little I was charging at the beginning when I started out. And I get that, you know, you're going to be having to deal with imposter syndrome and like confidence issues and going out against more experienced freelancers and not feeling like you can charge rates that are relative to them and all that kind of stuff. I get all of that. But the thing about like having really low rates is that you attract a certain type of client. And if you're attracting a certain type of client who is usually going to give you shit, then you do a good job for them at essentially very little money. And they are obviously therefore going to recommend you to all their mates. You end up in a situation where you're getting recommended to lots of clients that you really don't want to be working for.
The circle of shite.
Right. I think it might be worth thinking about like what your day-to-day is going to look like. Like how, I don't know how old their kids are or what their childcare situation is or whatever, but when you go into a job and you come home again, everything's quite easy to plan, right? Everything's like, these are the hours that I work and these are the hours that my kids are at school or at wherever they are. And going full-time self-employed is quite different. And maybe thinking as a family, I don't know if you have a partner, I don't know anything about your situation, but thinking as a family about like what that change is going to look like in a practical, logistical, day-to-day way would be helpful to do before you do it. As we've talked about on various episodes, like there is some politics and some friction that can come with being self-employed when your partner isn't and you have children. And maybe like the earlier you talk about all that stuff and like what your plans are and what your structure might look like and what your, how your day might be. Are you going to work in a co-working space? Are you going to work at home? Where is that going to happen? Are you going to have to work evenings realistically? How does your partner feel about that? How do your kids feel about that? How do you feel about that? Like, you know, the earlier you think about these things, the less likely they are to cause friction and issues.
That is a great point. There are some things that you feel like you must do, but you don't have to do. You know, like things like get business cards. You might feel like you need to do lots of things, but you really don't. Ultimately, you just need to get somebody to pay you to do some work. That ties around to that whole you will never be ready thing, isn't it? Like at some point, you just need to start because it will feel like, oh, I could do this and I could do that. And maybe I need to get my photos done and blah, blah, blah. And the weird thing is, even though, yes, maybe it's a great idea to have a buffer of cash and so on and so forth. And yes, you should be as sensible as you can, especially when other people depend on you. There is nothing like having to find the work hanging over your head.
It's very true.
Get your ass into gear to find the work.
Mm.
Okay, if you want to help out Detective Mo White, let us know your thoughts. You can do it in the Facebook group. This is episode 46. Also, get in touch on Instagram and Twitter, hashtag DIFDK podcast. Plus, of course, we need a question. Can it even be anonymous? You can post those to us via doingitforthekids.net.
And it's Marge Ainsley on Being Freelance this week.
Bloody legend, but it's Marge Ainsley.
She is.
Okay, well, I think we're done. Well done for
been
not being sick.
Yeah. Maybe that glass of milk I had at the beginning just was...
Settled you?
No.
Or unsettled you?
I don't know. I had that whisper in a glass of milk and felt sick.
Do you like to have chocolate in a glass of milk?
Yes, because I'm five.
Do you not like to have chocolate in a glass of milk?
Yeah, when I was like a child.
I get it from Rob. He likes to have cookies and milk before bed.
Guys.
He'll hate that I've said that, but it's true. Maybe it was my dinner.
What did you have?
Well, I had what we always have. Pasta sauce with pancetta in it. But when I opened the pancetta, I was like, smells porky. It's well within date, so it should be fine. But now I'm questioning myself. I should have trusted the porky smell, maybe. I don't know. I mean, it is dead pig, so of course it's going to smell porky.
Yeah.